the HFC Student Activities Office can connect you with campus-wide events and concerts, varsity sports, theater, dance and musical performances, our on-campus art gallery, study abroad programs, and any of nearly 40 student organizations for you to join. The HFC Student Activities Office operates 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday in the fall and winter semesters, and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday in the summer semester. You can find the HFC Student Activities Office on campus in the M Building or call 313-845-9865. That's 313-845-9865.
I'm Andy Parks, here to let you know that we're back. New time, new day. We're here every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m. right here on the station that's making waves, WHFR.FM, with nothing but the very best in gospel music. Gospel jazz, gospel hip-hop, urban contemporary praise and worship, you name it. All things gospel, but strictly gospel. Right here on the station that's making waves, WHFR.FM.
World to save us, give us life by washing us in his word. He had salvation in his hand.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Welcome to the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here. It is my pleasure to be enjoying this summer season, but I'll tell you, there is nothing more exciting to look forward to, in my opinion, in the summer season than Dearborn Homecoming Festival. And I want to take you back all the way to Thursday, February 2nd. That was a very big day in the community of Dearborn's history. Why, you might ask? Well, that was the day that our mayor, Abdallah Hamoud, made the announcement that Dearborn Homecoming is coming home. Now, for many of us, we jumped up and down, we rejoiced, we celebrated. And for other people, well, they got busy, really busy, starting to make this festival happen back in its Ford Field location. So as we celebrate the coming of homecoming next weekend, August 4th through 6th, the 42nd annual event, we thought we would circle it back to the person that kicked off this whole thing, and that is Mayor Abdallah Hamoud. Welcome to the Journal, Mayor.
Thank you so much for having me.
Certainly. We have some ideas of what works, what doesn't work when we try new things. But from your perspective, why the flip back? We, as you know, as everyone I think knows, we did a different location last year as we came back with homecoming. And it was fine, but nothing like that homecoming. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, I think most individuals forget the reason we had homecoming at the Ford Performing Arts Center last year was because of the flooding and the damages that had occurred at Ford Field. And so what we've been doing since is a lot of work within the Rouge River. In fact, we've been doing over $1 million worth of log jam removals, which have actually brought down the water levels at the Rouge River, protecting not only Ford Field, but also our Dearborn Hills golf course. And so we feel comfortable moving back this large investment and this, you know, this festival back to Ford Field, which is its original home, and hopefully to keep it there forever.
Some of us were not even born yet when homecoming started. Others of us were just children. That would be me. But this history that is rooted, you know, in this festival is certainly not unusual in this community of Dearborn and Metro Detroit, particularly the Dearborn location. Why is homecoming, in your opinion, as you are now looking at it from a different vantage point, why is it just so very important?
You know, homecoming is different than festivals you see in other cities, and it's because homecoming really stands for its name. It's a time in where all of our alumnus come back home from the various high schools, those who used to be residents in the city of Dearborn. They all meet together. They actually congregate under the tents that we have for Edsel Ford, Fortson, Dearborn High, Divine Child, whatever it might be. And that's really what makes our homecoming special. Secondly, a big chunk of the proceeds that come out of this festival go to the Dearborn-based nonprofits that give it right back to Dearborn families and Dearborn residents. And so that's the other element of this festival that's so unique and so special. This is not an event about, you know, putting dollars in the pockets of the city government. Actually, all the proceeds and the profits go to the Goodfellows, the Fortson Alumni Varsity Club, the Dearborn Exchange Club, these three organizations largely that help reinvest and make sure all families are made whole in our city.
Thank you. I can't imagine anyone listening that has not heard of homecoming, but should that be the case, how would you pitch coming to this event for some newbies that maybe are new to the community or in some of our surrounding communities that are thinking, huh, this sounds really interesting?
If you're looking for a family-friendly environment, if you want your taste buds to explode, if you're looking for great entertainment with no cost, this is the festival you want to come. We bring home A-listers, and our music performances are at no additional cost to any resident entering. There's actually no cost to come into the festival. And really just this family-friendly environment that we create amongst people that are all part of this community, that all love this culture, that all love the people in the city. And we get together and we celebrate for 3 straight days. And if that's not enough, come Saturday and Sunday night, we light up our skies with fireworks that are a memorable experience, especially if you're sitting at the hilltop of Ford Field, now that we're back home.
There really is nothing like that. And when we talk about, you know, community fireworks, we're not talking about a few things that get lit by, you know, some guy from the back of a truck. We're talking
professional fireworks show. And the only way to describe it at Ford Field, you know, one, you want to go and find your spot in that field early. Everybody puts out their towels or their blankets, whatever it might be. But two, when the fireworks go off while the performances were just, you know, live on stage, it feels as if the fireworks are right above your head and you can feel each and every single moment of it. And it really is just creates a lasting memory with loved ones that people talk about for generations.
Speaking of lasting memories of homecoming, do you have any favorites, any experiences that you remember when and who you ran into or who you met maybe? Or because I know homecoming can be kind of romantic. You mentioned the fireworks.
Yeah.
Nice dinner out, you know, buy somebody a piece of pottery or something.
I'll tell you, the funniest experience was actually last year. You know, last year I actually manned the golf carts. And so I drove people to and from their vehicles that are coming towards Homecoming Festival. Another reason you should come, we make this experience as easy as possible. I dropped off this lovely couple, and you know, when they asked, what do I do with the city? I said, I'm the mayor. And they just laughed uncontrollably. They said, that's so funny. We appreciate that laugh, though. And they tried giving me a tip. And so I dropped them off. Weeks later, I get a letter in the mail from this couple. And they apologized because they went home like, you know what, I wonder who the actual mayor of the city is. And it turns out I was not lying. And so I think that's really funny. It's a time for me to just, you know, just be Abdullah from Dearborn. I'm not dressed the mayoral part at this festival. I'm dressed like any other goer. And I try to interact with people in the most natural way, without the titles or any of the formalities. And so that experience was pretty funny. They actually sent me an olive branch as a gift. And kind of their apologies. And so that was really memorable last year.
That's a great story. We're joined on the Journal this afternoon with Mayor Abdullah Hammoud. Yes, it really is him. Yes, he really is the mayor of Dearborn. And we are talking about next weekend's 42nd annual Homecoming Festival returning to Dearborn's Ford Field. We want to confirm, remember, Dearborn's Ford Field, not that other one, the big one, the big, big, big one in Detroit. This is the big one in Dearborn. We say like Monroe, Michigan Avenue in Monroe, or just south of, how do you describe the exact, you know, vista?
If you're coming on Michigan Avenue, you can turn on Brady, you can turn on Monroe, and you're going to hit a giant park. You can't miss it. Signs will be everywhere.
Excellent. You alluded to some pretty good A-list talent of entertainment, and we have in the past years seen some. I mean, I remember seeing the Spinners many years ago or several years ago before they were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and now they are Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, band that I got to see for the first time at Dearborn Homecoming. So you're not kidding when you, you know, you talk about the quality and the talent and the variety of entertainment. And while we won't get into the nuts and bolts of who's on when and so on, I do want to direct our listeners to the Dearborn Homecoming website, where I know some of this kind of ebbs and flows. So we will we'll certainly have people check that ongoing throughout the next week to mark their calendars for when they, you know, want to attend and who they want to see. Is there anything that you would like to share at this point, or any teasers about, you know, any of the activities or special performances?
You know, what I would tell you is we have, you know, a lot of local artists that grace our stage, which is also a great opportunity for any local talent that we'd love to highlight. And let's just say for some of the main performances, there's going to be a lot of sunshine that day and that weekend. And so if you're looking forward to some sunshine, whether it's in vocal talent or in the weather itself, this is the festival that you want to be at.
Well put. We are looking forward to having our listeners come in droves to the Homecoming Festival. Of course, WHFR will be there, as we have been, as a tradition of our radio station for 37 years now, in fact. And we know that many people do make this an annual event. If this is your 42nd time at Homecoming, let somebody know. What a story that would be. I've never missed one. I've gone for everyone. That's pretty incredible. But don't be intimidated by that if you are a newbie. We certainly want you to come and check it out. DearbornHomecoming.com is the website, and the festival runs noon to 11 p.m. all 3 days next weekend. And Mayor, you mentioned some of the organizations that benefit from this, aside from the guests that get to enjoy a wonderful weekend. I do want to just mention a couple of very special events. For example, the Bike Dearborn Homecoming Family Bike Ride that's going on, and that is going on the 6th, I think. No, that's on the 5th. That's going to be on Friday. And then there's even a 5K that's yes. going on Saturday of next week. So those, I noticed, those are things related to activity and health and moving around and getting active this summer season. So tell us a little bit about the sort of the impetus for those kinds of things.
Yeah, so it's really just trying to add, you know, other elements to the festival itself. Obviously, we're all about health and wellness in our city and trying to promote it. And this is one way that we do it. But if that's not for you, we have a classic car show on Friday from 3 to 8 p.m., a lot of classic cars that are coming into the city. But also if you have family members who are of different abilities, Friday what we have is called All-Stars Day. And so from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. before the festivals actually open up to the general public, we allow those families to come in and to experience the festival in a little more controlled environment for some of their family members that might have different needs.
Oh, thank you for mentioning the All-Stars. That's something that those of us that work at the festival in our respective booths absolutely love to get there a little bit early and experience that. It just does truly bring joy to the heart. You mentioned the commitment to health and always wanting to make sure that that this community is as healthy as it can be. Public parks are certainly a part of that. And just stepping away just for a quick minute, we know there has been quite an investment in the Dearborn Park system, and you've been busy with that as well as so many other things this summer season. But care to share any thoughts on sort of the philosophy behind that?
I don't think there's a problem in local government that green spaces cannot help tackle. Whether it's creating environments for people to come to connect, whether it's microeconomies and allowing the launching of small business owners and entrepreneurship to flourish, whether it's water absorption and helping our stormwater infrastructure system. Green spaces and parks really are like the center of democracy in our cities. And so we are privileged to have over 40-some parks throughout the city of Dearborn. We're building 3 new parks, one not too far from Fort Field, and we're reinvesting in over a dozen existing parks, including Fort Field Park. A lot of those investments, most people, they've already commenced in certain pockets of the city, but some of the heavy investments will come in 2024, which we're really excited about. And the project, you know, kind of rolling out this full $30 million will wrap up in 2025.
Whenever we think of Ford, at least for me, when I think of Ford Field, I kind of forget that it's a park. I just think it's just like this, it's a thing in and of itself. And it's like, it really is a park.
Our baseball fields have been laser graded. The open green space is beautiful. Homecoming is great. But even in the fall, we have our haunted trail, which we launched last year, expecting 1,000 people, when in fact 10,000 people showed up for a free haunted experience for their families, with a lot of treats to be given afterwards at no expense. And so we're really becoming the center of family-friendly experiences in Michigan.
The investment of time, the investment of decision-making, and then execution of all of these different things, homecoming, you know, included in this conversation today. It takes, you know, they say it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it takes a village to create a homecoming event that's going to be memorable for everybody. But tell us a little bit about your team.
The team is phenomenal. This is headed up by our Parks and Recreation Department and our Community Relations Department working hand in hand. And really, it takes about, you know, almost a full year to launch this event. And what we learned from last year coming in with only 5 months to really bring back homecoming festivals, 5 months is not enough time. And then we hit the ground running immediately after, and it still feels like it's not enough time. But it just to goes to show you all the sweat equity that gets put in into hosting such a phenomenal experience for our Dearborn families and for those coming in from outside to enjoy. I'm so extremely excited for it to happen this year. And the other thing I'll mention is, you know, if you're looking for a ride to Homecoming Festival, you can use the Smart Flex app. It's like a personalized Uber Lyft, and you can probably get to the festival in under $2.
Great tip. Thank you. We are excited, looking forward to next weekend, Dearborn Homecoming Festival, again, August 4th, 5th, and 6th, starting around noon for the regular events, going until 11 o'clock all 3 days. Those wonderful, wonderful fireworks on Saturday and Sunday evening, it is not to be missed. And so we have been celebrating since that announcement on February 2nd, Mayor Hammoud, and we know that your team has been working very hard to pull off what is going to be, we think, the best homecoming festival ever. So we look forward to seeing our listeners there, DearbornHomecoming.com, for more information. And we look forward to seeing Abdullah from Dearborn there as well. And maybe the mayor will show up too.
Catch me on a golf cart. We'll see you there.
Thank you for your time. Continued success.
Thank you.
We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. So excited to be broadcasting live next weekend at the Homecoming Festival, all 3 days. Stop by and say hello at WHFR's broadcast tent when you're there. And we know it's going to be the hit of the summer season. More on the way. Stay with us.
If you're 19 or older with certain underlying medical conditions such as asthma or diabetes, you can get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can disrupt your life for weeks. If you're 65 or older, it is also recommended you get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, no matter the season. Talk to your doctor about vaccination today and learn more at lung.org/protect yourself. A message from the American Lung Association in collaboration with Pfizer.
This is the WHFR Journal. Thank you so much for being here. Susan McGraw with you at this time. We are wrapping up the month of July, but some things are just getting started, and we're going to learn more about a local community activity event, an opportunity to really, really dig deep into the world of art. We just love talking about that topic, that subject, so let's keep it going on the segment of the Journal. I'm joined at this time with the highly regarded, known by millions, most wonderful director of the Dearborn Community Fund, Ms. Emma Jean Woodyard, who also just happens to be just a dynamite lady all the way around. Emma Jean, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we're so excited to have you back on the Journal today. How are you doing? How's your summer?
Well, summer, did we have a summer yet? It's been kind of up and down, hasn't it? No, so far so good. Yes, can't complain at all.
Glad to hear that. Well, we are always excited to hear what the Dearborn Community Fund is working on. We understand it is truly a staple in our arts community, which we have a very large presence here in the city of Dearborn. And Pockets of Perception is a program of the Dearborn Community Fund that is always looking for new people to join their pop design teams. So I understand we have a design team working on some projects, and this is school age children as well as people up to, as I understand it, mid-high school. But boy, this sounds exciting. We love learning about our young and new artists. So please tell us a little bit about Pockets of Perception and what's happening with 2023.
Well, that's a lot to talk about. Thank you very much for allowing us this opportunity. The Dearborn Community Fund launched the Pop Design Team project concept, if you want to call it, in 2010. So it has been around for a few years, and it has traction because people know about it, recognize it, and above all, see the outcome of the work that the student teams produce. Just a little bit of background on why the Pop Design Team. Back in the around 2010, we were aware of the need for a program that would really address issues of cultural diversity within our schools. And we came up with this design team idea with the emphasis on the word team that engages young people, usually high school age students, that would be involved in designing, producing art that would be permanent in the communities. This is not something you see today and it's gone tomorrow. And that was the whole idea, and that remains the idea today. So teams are selected not because somebody is a particularly good artist, whatever. We just look for people who have the creative urge. They can be musicians, they can be rioters, poets, visual artists, photographers, it doesn't matter. They have something that they like to do that we consider creative. And that's one of the things that we look for when we interview students for the positions within the team.
How many students typically make up a team, Imogene?
What we have found over the years is that a team of no more than 12 works best, especially, again, if you're trying to put together a team. These students come from a wide variety of backgrounds, different schools, different communities, and so on. And the idea of getting, you know, the old saying, like herding cats, right? Well, you're kind of doing that because these kids don't know each other. So and they have a very short period of time to develop this team approach, but it does happen. It's almost magical. So we have a team of about no more than 12. We have found that to be a good number. I should say when we first started, the team was like 21, and we said, no more of that. So the team numbers anywhere from 10 to 12. Mm-hmm. And they do have to go through an application process. We look at it as kind of like an apprenticeship, a job, which can be used on their curriculum vitae, whatever you call it, their bios. What we have found over the years that many of the students have gone on to different schools, colleges, the majority of them seem to, that they use this as a reference, as a positive reference for something that they've done. And it's, you know, from our perspective, that's quite rewarding to know that it has such an impact on these kids. The whole idea is to, as I said earlier, come together, work as a team, learn to support one another, get a project done basically in about 2 months' time. So they go all the way from maybe not knowing each other, probably not knowing each other, to learning how to work as a team, to coming up with a design, to implementing the design, and have a finished project by the end of, well, 6 to 8 weeks at the most. And it's quite a turnaround time, but it works.
We're talking about Pockets of Perception, or POP, Student Design Team 2023. Love the term POP, of course. It means a number of things, I'm sure. I'd like to circle back and look forward to talking more about the concept of team and the future of what students that have come through this process actually kind of step over to. But when this topic concept came about, you said it was initiated in 2010. Was it an independent idea? Was it, did you pull from other things going on in other communities? Had someone read something about something like this working? Or was it sort of an organic brainchild of the Dearborn Community Fund?
It was a combination of all the above. The people that were key at that time were great art educators like Bob Curtis, who's well known in the Dearborn community, was art educator, still is. Julie Moreno, who was the cultural arts coordinator at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center. She has since gone on to get a doctorate in arts therapy. So people like that who understood the process, number one, understood working with students, understood the role that art can play in everyday life. And through it all, we were able to come up with the concept. When you ask if we had taken an idea from somewhere else, per se, it's our own idea, but way back when, I remember attending a weekend long, it was like a seminar in Chicago, and they had a program called, I think it was called Studio 37. And it was something like what we've evolved into with ours, but different. But it gave us the idea that, hey, we could do something similar or, you know, better maybe in our community. I hate to say this, we would love to run this program year round. And, you know, with all the experience we have now, we could. It all comes down to funding. It really comes down to funding for the program. Because, again, I'm going to go back to say that the students are considered apprentices. They receive a small stipend for their efforts on the team. Believe me, it's modest. But the idea behind it is it teaches kind of a work ethic. You know, you don't get paid until the job is done, so to speak. And the students take it very seriously. They use it on their resumes. Majority of them seem to go on to different schools. I think you asked the question, what impact has this had maybe on their personal development, professional life going forward? We have students go on into become architects, costume designers, artists, individual artists in their own right. And for some, it's a wonderful memory that they use. It influenced them, but they go into other areas like the nursing profession or public health but they are quick to use this as a positive experience in their formative years.
Well, we certainly understand, Imogene, the value of art in lives for cultivating human beings and potentially, you know, building bridges and creating camaraderie and friendship and love and all that. And then the concept of art therapy as well, I think has been proven in so many instances about how it genuinely doesn't just help your mind, but it helps your body too. So this really is something that's going to be very all-inclusive. When we talk about opportunities for these young people to get involved, go through the process and then ultimately move on to other bigger and better things, or bigger things, maybe not better things, but because this sounds pretty darn cool. But how much physical time is involved in the what sounds like a very comprehensive process? And then I want to circle back and talk about where we can see some of the art since 2010 that is in the community. But is this a daily thing? I mean, it's the summer season. Here we are, late July. Many students are just at the pool, at the beach, and goofing around and relaxing and so on. But how intensive is this process? And how do the students feel about that part of it?
Well, it's very interesting. When we first started the program in 2010 and for a few years afterwards, we ran it through the school year. So the team would be selected and then start in basically September when school went in. They would meet every Saturday and by the end of the school year would have completed whatever the project that they had decided upon. But we found that it was just too long of a time period for a commitment. And, you know, the students have so many things going on. And again, the average age of the student is probably 16. And so by the time, you know, they're a junior in high school, their lives are pretty busy. And so after, you know, reviewing the process and so on, we took it down to basically, like I said, a 6 to 8 week program. So how it runs is, usually in February and March of the year, we start looking, requesting applications new student members. And the word goes out through all of the schools, not only in the Dearborn District, but surrounding areas. And we accept applications. Then there is an interview process. Again, I want to repeat, this is like a job, all right? It's like if you were going out to get I guess some people would say a real job, but we want it to be an experience like that. So the students have to come in, go through an interview process with the POP Design Committee, and then they are notified if they are on the team or not. And usually that happens mid-April. By early May, we start meeting with the team on Saturdays until school it gets out. So they meet on Saturdays from 9 to noon, and they start the whole process actually then of getting to know each other, talking about subject matter for the project. We've done murals in the last few couple of years, so it's usually a discussion about the area, the dynamics of the area, the history of the area. We bring people in to talk with them and share information, particularly about the history and the background of the area. And they use that, the students then use that to start design concepts. And again, there's 10 to 12 students on a team. sometimes they break down into smaller groups, but come together and, you know, agree, reach consensus on the direction that they want to go in. This year, we added something which we haven't had in the past, which is we brought in not only I should back up for a minute, I'm sorry, and say that the team is led by a qualified art teacher, instructor, and she's an artist herself. But this year, in addition to that person, we brought in a well-known Michigan muralist and who is working with the team on a regular basis. In the past, we would have guests come in for a session, and that would be it. But this year, we decided, since the project that we're doing this year is so big, that we would bring in Zach Curtis, who's well-known, to work with the team. So they have two expert people working with them. Nowhere else are they going to get this experience, you know, as they're getting now. So by the end of school, then the team starts meeting regularly, Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays of a week, each week, for approximately 5 weeks. And at that point, they are on site, and they are putting the drawings on the wall if it's a mural. They are up on the scaffolds. They are doing the doing. And that's where we are right now with the current one. And the design has been approved. They're free to get started. And it's pretty much how the process works. But, again, you know, to me, Susan, the beauty of it all is to see a group of kids come together, don't always know each other, immediately get into a groove where they are able to work through, you know, problem solving and come up with a unified image, which, by the way, has to be approved. If it's on a city property, it has to be approved by a city committee. If it's a school property, by a school committee. So there are steps that they know they have to go through to get their designs approved. And this is the process, and it seems to work. That's all I can say. It seems to work. And these kids form friendships that they continue long after it's done. We had I'll just share this with you. We had an opportunity back last fall to do a mural. It was kind of last minute. We were approached and asked to do a very large mural. And, of course, being who we are, we said, of course, we will help with this. We will do it. So we put a call out for volunteers to come and help the main artist. We hired a main artist to do it. We didn't have time to put a team together for that. We were surprised at how many former pop students came back. They said, "We're so excited. This is so great, you know," and they remembered each other. It was wonderful. And they got it done in a week. They got this big project done in a week.
It's a testament to the experience, certainly, that they had. Yeah. Through pop, no doubt about it. And you've just given so much information, and I've got a million more questions. But let's remind our listeners, so we're talking this afternoon with the director of the Dearborn Community Fund, Ms. Emma Jean Woodyard, and we're discussing a program of the Dearborn Community Fund called Pockets of Perception. We Are One Community, shortened, we call that POP. And as she's indicated, it's an apprentice-style program with some pretty lofty goals and some pretty amazing outcomes. Emma Jean, I want to circle back to this community concept of involvement, and then we'll talk about where in the community we, you know, citizens and people driving through and walking through can experience this art that has taken place over the years. But I just want to circle back one quick question. What is the specific age range, if like youngest to oldest on this team? Is there a short window, or is that going to really vary from team to team?
No, what we found, again, is that we have better results working with the students that are in the, I'm going to say, 14 to 17 age range. Usually when a student reaches senior year, they have so much going on, they don't want to take on anything else, no matter how much fun it is. Mm-hmm. Although that has been challenged as well. We have a young lady on our team this summer that was on a team before, and she desperately wanted to come back, and she said, I'll do it for free. I won't. I don't want anything. I just want to come back. And we've started to expand a bit in terms of creating kind of a, excuse me, I don't want to say supervisor, but someone who can be more of a leader because they've done it before. And that's a beautiful thing to watch as well, to see that they've taken on a different level of responsibility. And I should too say, you know, I have the brochure right in front of me because I like to be reminded myself about, you know, what is POP. And we say number one, as I mentioned, was to encourage multicultural understanding in the schools. But it's also to involve young people in the creative process using the arts, through the arts, to provide experience in the business side of the project. One of the things that's important is that the community fund has to raise the dollars to pay for these projects. And the projects, I mean, when you get into murals, and especially with the size of the one we're working on this year, it can range all the way from $12,000, and this includes, you know, the stipend that the kids get, up to $25,000. And it's not an inexpensive undertaking. Let me put it that way. So the students have to appreciate what we do and understand that it's no go if there's no show of money. And they get the message. So we also want it to be their investment in the greater community. So they can come back years from now and say, hey, I did that. My name's on that wall, and it was a positive thing that I did. And it's also a way to encourage the community in the process, because anytime we're doing a project, especially the murals, there's a lot of public interest. We did one a couple of years ago. It's on the Dick Blick Building in East Dearborn at Schaefer and Schlaff. And every morning there was an elderly gentleman who had his lawn chair out across the street watching. He lived in the neighborhood. And he just kept saying, this is so beautiful. I just love to watch this. This is so beautiful. And it's like, yeah, this is why we do it, you know, to get that kind of result. And then the last thing that we feel is important is that we want to create public art for permanent installation so that Dearborn is known then for the public art that it has. So there are many reasons why POP, we feel POP is important.
As we look at the concept of this year's design, and you said that they have to be created in advance and organized and so on, I'm thinking about topical displays, things related to what we as a community, we as a nation, we as a humankind might be going through at any given time, like COVID times or now, you know, global warming, a variety of different things. How sort of sociopolitical, I guess, does the art get? And I'm not saying that it needs to be protest pieces because that's not where I'm going with this, but just in terms of the timeliness of the art, or often people say art is timeless. What have you discovered over the years with the designs? And speak to this year's as well. And I'm not sure how much you're allowed to share, but I think it's probably open to know exactly where
absolutely.
Is
we
right
love
now.
The public.
Okay.
Oh, we love the public to come by. And actually, we have had people stop and say, I would love to paint. Well, fine, here's a paintbrush. You know, just make sure you have old clothes on. And that has happened any number of times. What we try to do is generally come up with a concept that it's real hard to be in a neutral territory with subjects. And we've had some situations where they didn't get out of hand. But let me just say we've had to make some changes because of certain things that were of concern, especially to the building owner. Remember, the building owner gets to tell us if they like it or not, and so we have to make sure it's approved by them. The current project is down at the Salina Intermediate School in Dearborn South End. And we had made a commitment to do a project down there several years ago. and became even more interested in doing one down there because of the project that the Dearborn Schools has launched called Green Playgrounds. And the Salina School Playgrounds are the first to benefit from this project. It's all about playgrounds that are environmentally friendly, you know, inclusive. Of course, everybody knows that the South End has issues with, you know, environmental concerns because of all the factories and the plants and the trains and trucks and everything down there. And so they're working to change the complexion, let me put it that way, of the playgrounds down there. So they will become more green. They've got raised bed gardens. They're planting trees, so on. And so we felt that the mural would be well positioned down there because it calls attention. It's a beautiful thing. It calls attention to the beauty and will call attention to the green playgrounds project. The subject matter, this project at the Salina Intermediate School is the more or less the history of the community and where things are now. All right. It's not like a parade of everything, but basically where things are now and all the positive things that are happening down there. So it's very colorful, and again, it's the largest mural that we have ever done. We had to actually rent a professional lift to do it. So wow. it's been an interesting project. In the past, I know one of the first ones that we did is located at the corner of Schaefer and John Nagy Drive. It's where the old Alchemos Market, the fish market are located. And that one had all to do with the environment, the importance of the Rouge River. And again, the students are the ones in the end, with guidance, of course, from the advisors, come up with the subject matter and then go from there. And we try to provide as much information, you know, to help them so that we want to get it right. Let me put it that way.
Of course. Do you have a list of businesses and community buildings, government buildings that are kind of willing, like, saying, oh, sure, we're in down the road if you want to think of us? Like, do you have a list going, or do you literally just wait until the group is, you know, connected together and then they start talking about what they want to do? Like, which comes first, the venue or the creative concept?
Well, what comes first is, what are we going to do? Are we going to do a mural? We have done sculptures in the past. We found those to be quite expensive to do, so that's why we tend to do more murals. We would love to have a list of, you know, potential sites. I know last year we had a hard time finding a place, but finally found one, and the building owner was very pleased to have us, you know, work with them for his building. The schools as a project, as I mentioned, which is the one we're doing this year, we are part of the Community Fund has representation on the Green Playground Project Committee. So it was a natural for us to say, you know, but yes, if there are businesses, entities out there that would love to have us work, you know, on their site, they can certainly contact us at the Dearborn Community Fund, and we would be happy to talk with them. The lifetime of the mural is probably about 25 years. About 25 years is the lifetime of a good mural, and we do go to the extra length and expense, because it is quite expensive to put the finished coat on, which helps to seal it and preserve it. And, you know, I mentioned the Blick mural earlier. I think that one was done 4 or 5 years ago, and it's still as bright today as it was when we first did it. So, yes, we would love to have more locations. We would love to have too many locations. That would be a good problem to have.
It sure would. In the process of making all these decisions and then getting underway and kicked off, you said, a 2-week period where the actual creation of the art takes place? That seems very fast. So
It's they start meeting in early May on Saturdays. So there's usually at least 6 weeks. between the Saturday meetings and then when they start meeting the 3-day-a-week team meetings in June. And then generally we do the painting in July, mm-hmm. and we are finished by the end of July. We have a dedication, which is usually the end of July, but this year will be different because we're trying to coordinate with the school's calendar and, you know, various other calendars. So the dedication for the Salina project will be August 16th, which is a Wednesday from 5 to 6 at the school grounds. So, yeah, that is a bit later than, yeah, we usually have it all wrapped up by the end of July.
Okay, got it. And so the time it takes to actually create the art, and I know it almost sounds like the hard part is everything that leads up to the, you know, the actual let's now paint or sculpt or draw or whatever, is still pretty short by, you know, if you think about people working on projects for months and months and months. So this is really not that way. You said typically throughout this month is when it gets done. I want to circle back for a minute, Evagene, to the process of the students and their connectedness. I was just looking through some pictures of a few pieces of art on your website. I recognize a couple of students from Henry Ford College, actually, that have participated in this. And I'm wondering, is there like a is there a repository of where we can see former teams, where we can see a list of where the art is throughout the community? Or is that just something, reach out to the community fund and ask specific questions? How does that work?
Well, we're at the point now where we're trying to really condense it all into something that is easy. There is an app, and I'm ashamed to say it's a Google app, that points out murals in Dearborn. Mainly the murals, and it's fairly new, and I apologize, I should know what it is, but again, you can always go on to our Pajeski Gallery site, because the Dearborn Community Fund oversees the care and feeding, I call it, of the Pajeski Gallery, which has its own website, PajeskiGallery.org, and, you know, get information, or, you know, send us an email, and we can provide that as well, but we're getting in with the technology. This Google app is something fairly new for Dearborn, but I guess it says we've got enough public art now. people are paying attention. I know that Bike Dearborn, for one, has done a number of rides, and they go from one piece to another. Access just completed a mural within the last year on one of their buildings. That's not part of the POP team, but it's another mural project, and they're becoming, it's interesting, you know, I was just watching something on television the other day about a small town in Indiana where they have murals all over the place. People no more worry about graffiti. It's, you know, the murals are here, so, which is the good thing. And a lot of the graffiti artists are able to earn a living now because they do murals.
That's a really cool thing. You know, it seems like we used to go into those little small towns up north, or you go to a little alleyway in Detroit, or even you see some murals. But just knowing that we've got those as well as other forms of art, particularly created by young up-and-coming artists or those interested in the creative arts, is a pretty neat thing here in our own community. We're a big city. You know, this is a big city to be able to take on something that is, I think, very quaint, but also very, very empowering for these young people. Sort of a symbiotic relationship between the community, the students, and then everybody else involved. In the process of coordinating the people that are going to be working on this project as leaders, do those people change over the years? Is it just kind of who's available when, or is it based on what the students are interested in creating? I would think there would be a specialty involved in the need to lead a team. How does that part work?
You're talking now about the students per se?
Those that are managing the students herding the cats, as you said.
We have had change over the time since 2010, and the original two that really were dynamic were two Dearborn school art teachers. Wendy Sample was one, and Muhammad Bazzi. And Wendy's retired now, and Muhammad is still a teacher full-time at Fortson High School. But they ran the program for probably about 5 years, 6 years, And then they said, you know, we need to take a break because it does take a lot out of you, especially in the summertime. And so the art teacher now is, her name is Sunshine Durant, believe it or not. She's a great, and she's an art teacher in the Dearborn schools. She loves this program. And she is the one that helps to coordinate it. She's the one that meets with the students on Saturdays. And she's a great resource for them, you know. So it takes two good people. And then we have an advisory committee that oversees. And, you know, anybody that would like to be part of that, we welcome. You know, we're always looking for new people. It means being involved in the interviews with the students. It means helping to monitor the activities as it's unfolding. And, you know, just acting in capacity as an advisor. And that's where Bob Curtis comes in and others like him. Mike Kirk, well-known architect for Newman Smith, he's on our advisory panel. And, again, we're always looking for, you know, new people to be on that committee, that advisory committee.
Dearborn Community Fund email address, communityfund@dearborn.gov, communityfund@dearborn.gov. And you can certainly just go to the website, dearborncommunityfund.org, easy enough to find. This sure is a point of pride for, I think, anybody that's got their hands in some capacity. And Emma Jean, you are certainly at the forefront of all of this. And I love what you said about sort of hearing something about what was going on in Chicago, something kind of sort of related to this, planted a seed in your head, and you wanted to figure out how to do it bigger and better. And I love the fact that that is a theme recurring in the Dearborn Community Fund and throughout the arts here in Dearborn. We have just a few minutes left. Is there anything else that that the fund is working on or that, you know, you're looking to promote or get some support for, not only this advisory committee, but others? Love to hear about that. And then part two of this question, you mentioned somebody saying they want to come up and paint. Like, I'm interested, I'm inspired, I'm intrigued by this, and I'm inspired by what's happening, and art should be inspirational. Tell us how we as community members in Dearborn can scratch that itch just a little bit.
Oh, scratch that itch. Well, I would just like to interject something here, if I might, Susan, and that is I should name the sponsors for POP who've been loyal because, again, we have to raise the money for these projects every year. And while in a perfect world we would have a reserve going, it takes time to build that reserve. And certainly the Ford Motor Company Fund has been a wonderful, wonderful supporter for the POP project for almost since day one. And we're very appreciative of that. This year we have the UAW from down in the south end there. That said, yep, we want to support this and because it's in their backyard. So we're very happy about that. We have individual donors. I mean, anybody can support POP by going on the Community Fund website and, you know, saying donate and it comes up. So, it's really important that we keep in touch with our sponsors. You know that, I'm sure, how important sponsors are. And this year, it was kind of scary this year. I don't know why, but it all came through. And certainly the Ford Motor Company Fund has been the one that has been the most loyal to it. They see it as a real opportunity to train young people and, you know, do get them ready to go out and meet the world, so to speak. And so we're very appreciative of that. Other things that are coming up with the Community Fund, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we oversee the Pajeski Gallery at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center. And that in itself is a topic for discussion for another day, but
absolutely.
It is a regional gallery that features highly professional all the way down to the all student art show from Dearborn Schools, and it's an annual show. So it's right now we have an exhibit going on in our gallery that features the work of people with special needs. And we look to partner with other organizations. In this case, it's with the organization known as STEP. And they work exclusively with people with special needs. And we have a gallery full of work from their clients and their art studios. So we're very happy about that. We have a minor role. You asked about homecoming. Dearborn Community Fund used to be much more involved in homecoming per se, but we still are, but not as much. Just let me put it that way. We still think it's a wonderful event and do what we can to help support it, but we have other things that we need to be concentrating on. So we'll let everybody else run homecoming. I'm assuming WHFR will be there.
We absolutely will bring back. Actually, since the pandemic, we had not done our CD album music sales donations, which was quite a fundraiser for us. But we're excited and proud to say that that's coming back this year as well. So, yeah, look for us at homecoming, the WHFR tent. We'll be there.
But going forward, we always have things that we want to get done. But again, the community fund relies on donations and sponsorships, and we run programs like April Arts Month, which is a big thing, you know, getting the calendar of events ready. We try to look for ways that we can partner more with other agencies in the community. We've had some very successful ones with Henry Ford College over the years, especially with the art and music faculty. So we're very appreciative of that. So we're always looking and always building, and maybe someday, I work part-time, by the way, there's only so much you can do part-time.
And you pack it in,
not
I'll tell you that.
It's just the way it is. No, the Community Fund, you know, we're here to support major things in the community to make for a stronger community. That's what we're all about.
And you're doing just that, Imogene, with both Pockets of Perception as well as so many of the other things that you had just mentioned. If someone is particularly impassioned and inspired by seeing art, hearing art, appreciating art in this community, what do you recommend as the first step? Maybe they don't even know exactly what they want to do, but they want to get artistic and have a little bit of time on their hands. What's a good piece of advice? What's a jumping off point?
I think the best thing to do at this point is to contact the Pajeski Gallery. And the reason being, you know, we used to have an organization for many years called the Dearborn Community Arts Council. And unfortunately, during COVID, it kind of disappeared. And I'm sad about it because I worked for them for many years. And they actually were founded in 1969. To see them go away. And so there is no central organization now. The Community Fund does do, as we've discussed, we do, you know, some arts programming. But the Pajeski Gallery is the place to go, especially for the visual arts, you know. But bottom line is anybody can contact the Dearborn Community Fund with a question. And we have the connections and the, you know, the contact information to get them to where they might want to be. So, again, it's DearbornCommunityFund.org, and just ask your question or send it to my email. That would be fine. I like getting emails.
Would you share what your direct email address is, please?
Yes, it's E. Woodyard. That's a Y in there, not a W. E. Woodyard at Dearborn.gov.
Right, just as simple as that. Imogene, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you for everything you're doing to contribute to the success of the arts and the inspiration for our younger generations coming up in this community. We're going to be very excitedly looking forward to that official sort of reveal for the this year's POP event, as you said, taking place August 16th, and the Salina Schools playground area. If you want to check it out, that's where this beautiful the process is taking place. We wish you a lovely summer. We'll see you, I'm sure, at homecoming, and just continued success in all of your endeavors. Imogene, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Susan. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. This is the WHFR Journal. Again, Susan McGraw here. Emma Jean Woodyard, director of the Dearborn Community Fund. Earlier in our show today, we heard from the one and only Mayor Abdallah Hammoud from Dearborn talking about Dearborn Homecoming Festival, which is right around the corner, as you know. So definitely keep those dates on your calendar, first full weekend in August. And please, when you stop in, make sure you come by the WHFR tent. We will not only be broadcasting live, but also having that, again, let's call it our donation tent for acquiring some really cool music that maybe you can't get anywhere else, and also make a donation, a contribution to keeping WHFR successful and moving forward to be your station here in the community for independent non-commercial programming. This is the WHFR Journal. This is WHFR Dearborn. We are making waves.
WHFR.FM is your home for super dorky radio every single Thursday from 8 to 11 on The Jump Button. Tune in to hear music from video games, cartoons, anime, and more every Thursday from 8 to 11 p.m. only here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
College's Mirror News is looking for new writers. The newspaper is student-run and a great opportunity for budding journalists to gain experience. The Mirror News covers a variety of topics such as politics, new restaurants, art exhibits, local events, and recent films. If you would like to share your talents, email Dr. Kim at pkim@hfcc.edu or the editor at editor@hfcc.edu. See yourself in the Mirror News.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Listeners supported, non-commercial radio, from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn,